stress and anxiety and what to do about it. This is something that I believe that we all face as humans, because our body is formulated to keep us alive. And so from an evolutionary standpoint, we are biased towards paying attention to things that can harm us. And so a lot of times it's our body that's responding to stress and anxiety, even though logically we may have determined that there is no threat, our body is still going to respond. And when the body responds, it tells the mind that no, something is important and off. And so then it almost convinces the mind to change its perspective. And everything is about perspective. So if our perspective is interrupted by the body, then we will be convinced that we are in danger. And there's little tricks that we can use to get our body out of a state of anxiety. And there's a couple that I use. And it all has to do with breath. And breath, from a yogic perspective, is normally termed pranayama. Linda's saying, yes, I'm feeling anxiety in my body, even though I'm not in any danger. So that's what I'm looking to address, because when you feel that, that's great. But a lot of times we're not even feeling it, and we're just in the mode of everything's in danger. And our nervous system has a sympathetic system and a parasympathetic system, and those are essentially like a switch. And switching to sympathetic means that you're in fight or flight system. And switching to parasympathetic means that your body is in a rest digest. That's a simple mechanistic reductionist way of thinking about the systems. It's what I was taught in psychology at university. I've learned I feel anxiety when I'm not living in the now. Just read the Hindu Yoga Science of Breath. So back to breath. Pranayama. Prana, otherwise known as life force, and yama or ayama, which means expansion. And so a lot of people translate pranayama to mean extending life. But it's right there in the actual word. It means expanding life. And that word expanding isn't really translated into English and even our programming, because we're not taught of the multiple dimensions of reality, of self, and of our mind and our emotional state. So by expanding life or life force, we are able to experience more of it. Maura, I think is the name, is asking if I've ever thought of doing a retreat. I've done retreats before. It's not necessarily my thing right now. However, I am going to be with the Human Garage crew on May 12th in Austin, Texas, and they're going on a world tour, so I might be joining along with them. Usually open up. I'm one of the opening acts for their day-long programs. Right, I'm worried about my dad's care. He has dementia and I've been unemployed, but I just got hired for a job. It's my thoughts. Yes, I'm creating worry. Okay, so somebody else said yesterday, a comment, I just read a comment, but in three sentences, she used words like, I need to, I don't like this, I'm obligated. I forget, but it was like all of these words, and you can see within the language that we use, the perceptive place that we're at. But this is beyond that. So I'm going to give you guys an example of something that happened to me that I could feel the anxiety in my body and how to get rid of it. So one example is driving down the street and we're on the freeway, my wife, Caro, and I, and she starts talking to me you know, asking me to look at her phone at something. And in that moment, I missed the exit, right? And so, like, that triggered some sort of response to me because we were in a hurry also, which from my perspective was not because of me. So we're in a hurry. I missed the exit. Why did I miss the exit? Because I'm being distracted to look at something. So that triggers a response in my body. Okay. Now, for the sake of the relationship and because I'm practicing this, now I'm presented an opportunity to observe this and be like, wow, that is interesting. Yes, we're going to be another 3 minutes late. And I know that it wasn't her fault that I missed the exit, but I'm responding, my body's responding as if it was. And the easy way to get rid of that is to then puke it onto the person in front of us who we think caused this anxiety. But that doesn't help anything, right? And so now it's like, how do we get this out of our body? And there's another example of like about to go on stage to speak, right? You feel the shakiness, you feel your voice a little bit not clear, and you can feel this before you get on stage. But logically, you know what you're saying. How do we get our bodies out of these states so that we can perform at our best? So there's one technique that I found in a book, I think it was written in 1912, called The Master Key System. And it's at almost the very end of this book. But the early 1900s had some amazing books. The Master Key System is one. Charles Hanel, I believe, wrote that. This is before Think and Grow Rich. So Think and Grow Rich gets a lot of the popularity, but the concepts of Think and Grow Rich are in these books that were written like 20 years before. There's another book too called The Science of Getting Rich. Wallace D. Wattles, I believe, is the book. But you'll see a lot of correlations between Think and Grow Rich and these other authors, because Think and Grow Rich, from what I remember, Napoleon Hill combined a bunch of other people's knowledge into that book. I believe this is the legend. I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it was Carnegie or Rockefeller. I'm not going to retell that story because I don't know it exactly. So in that book, what is suggested, and I don't remember where he got it from, but essentially you take a deep breath in and you fill up this space in your heart. And when you do that deep breath, then you 2 seconds. And then you take another deep breath in and you fill in more air. So you're adding more oxygen. You're opening up the heart even more. And then you hold that for another 2 to 4 seconds. And then you breathe in again. More breath in, filling up the heart. And then one more time. And then you hold it. And then you do stomach pumps. So you're like in the stomach. And then you release that breath out. This is doing a lot with the organs, the vagus nerve. But if you're getting those jitters and that anxiety, you can do this very silently. You can do this sitting down in the audience right before you're about to go on stage. You can do this while you're driving in the car and you can feel your body responding about something. It's just a deep breath in, and you can repeat this 3 to 5 times. And I found that this always works for me, and getting out of my, basically getting my body back to its resting position. It's opening up the heart. So one more time, it's breathing in as much as you can, opening up the heart, opening up the ribs, opening up the chest, breathing in is even more air. So you're expanding the lungs, even more air, and packing even more air. Oh, I forgot one more thing. And then you pump, 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 pump. This, keep on pumping. This is actually opening up even more space. And after the pumps, then you breathe in as much as you can. You fill it in a little bit more. And then you release. So the first round through, I forgot. After the stomach pumps, then you fill in that space even more. So I'm getting a comment. Maybe if you're already in a better place, you might be able to do that. But if you're feeling extremely anxious, that sounds really intense and a lot of work. It really isn't a lot of work. It's a lot of work to listen right now because I'm saying the stuff really quickly. But if you're in an anxious state and you're breathing through your mouth and you're tucked over, and that's what happens when you're in a state of anxiety, right? If you're really in a state of anxiety, what happens? You shut down, you curl up into a ball, you go back to that fetal position, and you just start crying through the mouth. So this is essentially the opposite of that. We're slowing down the breaths per minute, and we're now opening up the opposite side. So yeah, it's going to be a journey. You're taking yourself out of that state. And force is a strong word, but it's essentially you guiding your body in the reverse direction that you're going right now. So when you start feeling yourself going into this, like, you know, cramping in on your organs, cramping in on your heart, pulling your shoulders forward, that's all protection, right? We can train ourselves back to that. Now, this will take practice, and this may be difficult to start, but don't maybe not try it when you just got yelled at by your father, you know, and it brings up all, like, that's like an intense situation. Maybe try it when somebody cuts you off in traffic and there's not any real danger, but you're feeling it. So instead of yelling and screaming at the person, if that's what you're doing, then remember this. This is a technique, and this is life. We can train our emotions. A lot of people don't realize that. The things that we do all the time, we don't realize can be adapted like a skill. It can be smooth. It can be refined. I used to own gyms, and hundreds of people walked in my gyms, and 1 out of 100 people told me that they were trained how to run. I would say, who would be 1 out of 100, just giving an average, would raise their hand? So 3 out of 20, what is that? That's 15 out of 100 ran a marathon, but only one of those have ever been trained to run. And out of those that didn't run a marathon, they still run for exercise. But we don't get trained how to run. Running can be a skill that we can refine, just like our emotional states. We can refine our emotional states because the emotional states are impacted by the position of our body, by the health of our organs, by the ability for emotions to clear through the body. Emotions aren't bad. We're not trying to get rid of them. What we're trying to do is allow for the movement at a level, and we can look at it from an organ system or the vagus nerve being blocked or energy meridians coming through the chakras. We experience it first from a state of safety. Am I safe? And that's very root, lower base chakras. And we can respond from a very strong fear point of fight or flight. Like, do my legs need to run out of this position because the lion's going to eat me? And we can start digesting it up the chakras into sacral, heart, throat, talk it out. You know, if it's less dangerous, is there a communication that can be had into the higher centers? Can we reframe our perception about it? And if that emotional energy isn't able to flow through that natural state, then we get stuck in one of those. Maybe we're stuck below the throat. That equals pain in the heart. Where if the energy would that stuck, stagnant energy would flow out of the heart into our throat, probably through this gate. This is a gate, the throat. It goes narrower here. Through that gate into our higher centers where we can make meaning of it and create from that. Not basically anything that happens to us, none of it is, quote, bad. It just can get stuck in our body. And that can lead to an experience that will feel bad. Someone just said, isn't the lion the self just as the lamb? Exactly. That's what I mean. People can have their agenda. They are to eat, even if it's you. And to be stuck in that thing that just was to cause you action so that you can survive, run away, that's an activity that naturally we would clear immediately. But we're not doing things like that now. We're not running away. We're not jostling up the body. We're not opening up the lungs. What does that run do? It pumps your full system and allows the energy to move through you. So once you escape, it's not still stuck there. You have expressed it physically. And so that's where things like Kriya, which I've got over 100 of them. If you go to my website and look up teachings, you can go and see all of my recordings of Kriyas. Most of them are 15 to 20 minutes long, very, very quick. And you go through movements and breath and sound to allow your channels to be cleared, because we're not doing that regularly. What we're doing regularly is we're receiving an email that is bad news. So the lion's coming metaphorically in the form of an email, bad news, and we have no way of escaping it. And we're not actually physically moving. We're just sitting in our chair, slumping lower, getting weaker, shoulders rounding forward, back rounding, position in the chair getting worse, and breathing shallower, but more often. So less oxygen is getting into our cells, straining our eyes, and we just get more bad news and more bad news and more bad news and more bad news. And it's getting stuck and stuck and stuck and stuck. So that when we go watch our kids' soccer practice, we're experiencing that soccer practice from the same energy as all of those metaphorical lines that came to you in the form of bad news through an email. It's so silly that now we're upset watching something that should be giving us joy. This is depression, essentially. We are depressed. We're crushed in. Reality is putting more pressure on us than we have an ability to express into reality. So I already gave one. Someone said, I want to see this whole live. So these lives I've started making into podcast, and that podcast is called the Self-Expansion Podcast. So you can find that on any podcasting platform. I also am interviewing amazing people that are also contributing to our abilities to expand the concept of self. Pranayama. So there is a pranayama called Kapalabhati. Kapala means skull, and bhati means luminous. Around there, right? These are rough translations. Shining. So skull shining breath, Kapalabhati, is a breath that illuminates the mind. So we're talking about being depressed. We're talking about the emotions being stuck in the body. Illuminating, lighting up the higher centers is going to also be similar to what I was saying before with changing the posture. This is going to be lighting up the energy system. And the way that we light up the skull with Kapalabhati is we use the diaphragm. So the diaphragm is also another gate like the throat. So the throat blocks off a lot of energy from flowing through if we're not expressing vocally. If we never speak our truth, that energy gets stuck from heart down. If we're not expressing our breath, then that energy also gets stuck down below. So Kapalabhati is a breathwork that some breathwork practitioners says is different than Breath of Fire, that they're slightly different. Same thing. Translations don't exactly happen, but we're going to say that Breath of Fire is the English translation of Kapalabhati. And Breath of Fire is essentially taking your diaphragm and pulling it in. You're focusing on the exhale. The exhale. What does the exhale symbolize? Release. Why are we releasing? So that energy stuck down there, giving us anxiety and stress, can come through. Now, here's the crazy thing, is that if we don't accept this, we don't allow ourselves to be granted the benefit from it. So if you're listening or you're trying these techniques and you're like, there's no way that can work, well, then there's no way that can work. You're very rarely going to receive something that you don't feel like you deserve. On the other end of that, if you've done practices like Breath of Fire or yoga or pranayama, and you don't really understand, you never really comprehended the totality of why this is working, now I'm giving you some of the why, and sometimes that helps even more. So Breath of Fire, the diaphragm's coming in on the exhale. We're going all through to the nose. So that diaphragm coming in on the exhale, that it should feel like you're punching your spine with the skin of your abs is pulling back and hitting your spine. And if you do that one after another, all you're focusing on is the exhale. And what that can also be like, just to train you, is like a dog panting. So if you panted like a dog with your mouth open, right? And you can even see a dog is exhale, 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 exhale. And the inhales are happening automatically. And then you just close your mouth. So you go from panting like a dog to closing the mouth. And the rhythm can change. I was going a little bit fast there. You can go slower. The inhale happens on its own. It happens automatically. Once again, remember the intention. Skull illuminating. Breath. And this is studied with westernized mechanistic reductionist science. And it is superficially, they say, proving, but it's really validating what was already known. It's a remembrance of what's already been known. But in the West, we like to validate things with our charts in our machines, and we reduce things into singular plot points, and we see if there's statistically significant changes based on change. What I meant to say is statistically significant results based on what we change. So there's an action and there's a result. Those aren't the words I'm looking for. I'm looking for something else. Cause and effect, those are the words I'm looking for. There is a change, there's a cause, and there's an effect. Okay, I've got another question which I'll answer. I just want to continue on the breath of fire. So that breath of fire, just doing that, try it for 90 seconds. Some counter indications for that. So pregnancy, I'm not recommending doing it with pregnancy. And also moon cycle, because we're moving energy up, like we're forcing that energy up to shine the breath. Moon cycle is releasing energy down, so it's counter. So I would stay off it if you're cycling. Hopefully you're doing Kapalabhati right now as I'm speaking, because you'll start to feel your spine, the channel of your spine, start to clear. Now, we can enhance that in kriyas by doing movements of the body, right? We can exhale while lifting your arms up or twisting or even chanting. And somebody asked, what do we do if we do Breath of Fire, but we have a hard time speaking the truth? Chanting. You can chant while doing Breath of Fire. ra ma ra ma ra ma ra. So instead of just a I'm speaking out. This is a ra ma chant. I'm not saying ra because that's the name that I go by, which is really just short for my birth name, which is Ronald, and my name that I went by during the first chapter, the first major phase of my life, which was Ronnie. And then I got assigned a spiritual name, which was Ravi. And so Ra is essentially the shortening of those names because Ra just feels the best out of that. And it's a part of all those names. And then Ra of Earth is becoming because I'm identifying as an earthling. And Ra is also light. And so it all does work. I'm light manifested as an earthling. But we can start chanting. And that Ra Ma meditation I was just doing is from a Kriya that is Kriya for anger. So you're exhaling forcefully as you're pushing your hands out, and then you bring in the ma. Ma is feminine. So you're exerting out masculine, ma, feminine. So we've got two techniques here, right? The breathing, and that has to do with posture, and then breath of fire. And breath of fire can just be done breath of fire. It can be done for, I said, 90 seconds to start with, go up to 3 minutes after that. Go to 11 minutes. You can even go up to 30 minutes. And you're going to start feeling sensations in the body. And it's those internal sensations that allow us to process what may be stuck, right? So as the air is moving that energy through, you're going to come up to walls. You know, your physical body might potentially be hitting a wall. And you get to see how you respond to that. You also get to observe how you respond to the uncomfortableness of breathing this way. This isn't hyperventilating. Remember, we're focusing on the exhale. We're actually getting air out of the body, which is going to be building up the carbon dioxide in the blood, which is then going to increase the amount of oxygen that the body receives in. Hyperventilating does the opposite. Hyperventilating focuses on the inhale. You guys can hear that? It's inhale forcefully, relax on the exhale. That happens automatically. And that has the opposite effect. It increases the amount of oxygen in the blood, which then reduces the amount of oxygen that goes into the cells. And that's the Bohr effect. I'm 99% sure that that's what that's called. My memory is serving me. The Bohr effect is essentially the more carbon dioxide in your blood, the more acidic your blood is. And the more acidic your blood is, the more oxygen your blood releases into the cells. So the blood has to come up to a certain acid level for the oxygen to be released into your cells. The more oxygen you're taking in with hyperventilating, the more alkaline your blood gets, which means that your blood's going to hold on to the oxygen. And less oxygen is now going into your cells. So hyperventilating, we feel, is necessary. Back to anxiety. I need to get more air in. I'm feeling constricted. I'm crying. That's crying, right? Even laughing hysterically does that. But crying, that's crying. That's anxiety. That's debilitating depression. That's you choking yourself off of what we call oxygen, what the East calls prana. So what do? We do the opposite. We focus on the exhale. We force the exhale. We activate the exhale and let the inhale happen automatically. Exhale, exhale, exhale. We're pulling that diaphragm to force that exhale. Releasing, we're letting go of control. We're getting more into the flow. We're allowing the release of this energy to start flowing up through our system so that we can process it. And that light comes up into the mind, the brain, the skull, the higher chakras, the higher centers, our thinking, our higher centers, our spiritual centers. And it allows for that energy to dissipate back into the ether. And we can even cycle it back around into our root so that we're not just moving the energy up and out, but we're going up, out, and around. And that's where the aura starts to take form because it's likely broken if we're blocked internally. It's weakened. It's been penetrated and depressed and broken by other fields of energy. This has been a really fun talk. Let's end it on a high note. Take care, everybody.